through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Monday. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. You guys have a good week, Jake. Did you continue your ninja training this weekend?
No, I needed to let my calluses.
You had to let yourself heal.
Heal a little bit
from a day of training.
Yes, okay. Yes. My calluses completely ripped off my hand. I needed a little bit of time. But this
fair.
Week back at it. But we got some great news on Friday.
We did. And can I tell you guys a theory that I have before I say this news?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Now, hear me out. I don't want to make it about me, okay?
That's a first.
Okay, so you guys know
so
me.
So this will definitely be about you.
I never want to make it about me.
Okay.
It is not my MO.
Okay, continue.
That being said, I think John Schneider doesn't like me.
Why?
What makes you say that?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but all of these signings have happened after our show, directly after our show, and I'm convinced that he is mad at me, or jealous.
But why? Why would he be mad at you, Stacey?
Or jealous. I want to hear the jealous part.
Isn't this the same person that raged that John Schneider and Pete Carroll probably doesn't know who she is?
He definitely doesn't know who I am.
So now you're convinced that not only does he know who you are.
He definitely doesn't know who I am.
But he's mad at you
lean
and has a vendetta against you.
Lean into it, Jake.
Okay,
no, my new theory
so
is
why?
That John Schneider, who does not know who I am, are you mad at me? No, he doesn't know who I am. No, I'm joking. But we had yet another signing.
I mean, he might be.
Don't say that, Jake.
Be.
You
know
how neurotic I am. I'm just going to actually think that that's true. We did get breaking news from Friday. And by that, I mean the news that you guys have all already heard, but we're all going to be excited about it together and talk about what it means. And that is that the team is bringing back Chris Carson, running back Chris Carson coming back. The details here from ESPN's Brady Henderson, now that we have more details emerging over the weekend, kind of about what the deal looks like. It's one that you don't normally see around the league, but haven't really seen from Seattle, which is a voided year. But it's a 3-year deal, effectively a 2-year deal because it voids after year two. $5.5 million fully guaranteed, $4.5 million signing bonus. Again, this from ESPN's Brady Henderson. In 2021, Carson is going to have a $2.5 million cap hit. That's pretty team-friendly. And that is a $4.5 million base in 2022. So for at least 2 years, you've got Carson back here. Max value of the deal, $14.625 million. But again, the cap hit for this year, $2.5 million. And you have your starting running back here in Seattle in 2021, Jake.
Chris Carson is back, Stacy. He's back.
Yeah.
We get to hear more of runs like this, cut number two. We get to hear this for a couple more years. Let's go.
The handoff to Carson starts right. Back up the middle. Pounds through one. Through two. He's going to score. Touchdown. Seahawks. Chris Carson just runs over half of the Minnesota defense. The Seahawks have scored 3 touchdowns in the blink of an eye to start this second half. And Carson says, give me the ball. I'm going to run them all over.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. I can't wait. Now, the reason why I'm so excited about this, Stacey, is because, honestly, I didn't think that it was going to be a possibility.
I didn't either.
I didn't think that the Seahawks were going to be able to get him back, and especially when Aaron Jones was signed so early and re-signed back with the Packers at such a massive deal that he got. Chris Carson was the top dog in the market. And as I talked to some NFL insiders and some league sources, you really started to understand that the market, it just hasn't been playing favorable to a lot of players, a lot of different positions. And you've had guys at the tip top still be able to get lucrative deals. I mean, we saw Kenny Galladay's ridiculous $18 million per year deal. But for the most part, teams have been very frugal in areas in certain positions, and running back is definitely one of them. So if you're Chris Carson, in a normal year, you probably could have gotten a lot more money than what you got. But for the Seahawks, fortunately, they were able to get him back, and it is a absolute home run deal for the Seahawks. To be able to get him on this type of contract, Stacey, it is one of those where you can critique certain teams for paying major dollars and resources to the running back position, and I totally understand that. But in regards to Chris Carson's deal, I don't think you can really point to this contract and go, man, you're giving way too much money to Chris Carson. He is an impact player for this team. He's a guy that fits perfectly with the new offensive system that Shane Waldron is bringing in, and he fits perfectly with Carroll's desire to have a running game that has an impact, that commands a presence on the field. And guess what? You hear, don't take it from my word, take it from Pete Carroll himself, here in cut number four, talking about how Carson's style exemplifies exactly what they like to do.
You can tell why Chris is one, you know, one of our guys, you know, and he's exactly the emblematic of the kind of toughness and the physical, you know, approach we want to show.
What's the key to having him at 100% on a short week? I imagine that's really difficult with these Thursday night games.
Now, we didn't get to hear the end of that question, but but we also get to hear for three more years about the style of Chris Carson. Just loves the style here at cut number five. Pete Carroll just always, when he just gets this the biggest smile on his face when he talks about Chris Carson and that beautiful running style.
Well, he's got a style about him. You know, he's got a way. He's unique. He's not just a, he's got, you know, kind of that split-legged thing he's got going. He's got a lot of knees and elbows flying, and he's going to run right through you, finish really well. He's got something special about him. He took off and leaped over a guy again, you know. Yep. There's a style about him. Chris, when I first saw Chris back at Okie State and watched the film, it jumped off the film at me that he had this, he looked like other great players that I'd seen in the past. You know, he had moves and kind of a knack and a style about him, and I always tell you that 32, you know, it just kind of captured me way back when. And he has a real way about him, and I think it separates him from other players.
So badly wanted to say O.J. Simpson.
Oh,
he wanted to say it.
The best comparison,
no doubt. But
he wanted to.
He did. But Chris Carson brings all of that Pete Carroll just described. And when you talk about the ability to make something out of nothing, Chris Carson has done that tremendously well, and he's done it better than anybody that the Seahawks have tried to bring in since Marshawn Lynch. And that was one of the unique traits that Marshawn brought to the table. Beast mode was, look, if the hole wasn't there, he was going to find a way to create. He was going to find a way to get positive yards no matter what. And that's the type of runner that Chris Carson is. And I promise you this, guys, that as soon as that notification hit the rest of the teams in the NFC West, mm-hmm. that this was one of those signings that the rest of the competition in that division were not thrilled, that they put their head down. Ah, man, Chris Carson's back in this division. And the reason why is because he runs so tough and he makes their offense very versatile. And he makes it extremely difficult to stop because of that versatility of their ability to be a run-oriented team, to be able to strike and beat you in a variety of different ways. And so I am thrilled that Chris Carson is back here in Seattle.
This is a signing, the return of Chris Carson, that Seahawks fans should be happy about. And I know that the number one critique, look, 9 out of 10 comments that I'm seeing on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line right now are, yes, I can't wait to see Chris Carson back out there. I'm so excited he's coming back. The one or two occasional comments that are coming in here aren't negative per se, but they're worried. They're saying, well, wait a minute. This is a guy who struggled with health. I love having him back here, but I'm a little bit nervous. And you know what? That's something you are going to have to deal with. Bringing back Chris Carson for Pete Carroll's offense was the right move to make. It makes you a more potent offense, and I would have worried what your offense would have looked like without him. That said, you now have a lesson learned throughout Chris Carson's time here in Seattle. He'll probably miss a game or two. Like, he'll probably be injured. He is a powerful, physical downhill runner. He breaks tackles. I think you pointed out a stat from Pro Football Focus that he was, like, number two in broken tackles among all running backs.
Yeah,
an insane number of broken tackles per game. And that's fantastic. It also means that he's probably going to take on a few more injuries, a few more hits than the average running back would, right? Well, that means that in the time that he's been here, you need to have learned your lesson. All right, how do we adapt if Chris Carson's out? What do we do if Chris Carson's out? Do we keep running our head in the wall, or do we find a way to adapt for that game? And that's one of the most important lessons that I would have hoped Seattle has learned in the time that they've had Carson is, number one, just how explosive and special he can be, but number two, what to do if he's out.
Right, and part of the reason of, or how you can adapt, Stacey, is by having good depth behind him. So they've added Alex Collins, but Curtis, who's that other guy that they have that... that we've kind of forgotten about that's on their roster right now at that running back position.
I think he's a former first-round pick.
Ah. Yeah, that former first-round pick.
Oh, yeah,
from a couple
Rashad,
Rashad
Porter,
Penny.
Penny. Oh, okay.
Rashad Penny. Now, if you get Rashad Penny back and healthy, look, this is a guy that can be explosive. He can be a good 1-2 combination with Chris Carson. And if you're Rashad Penny, you were hoping that Chris Carson, not in a bad way because they're good friends and they're teammates and all that, but hey, this was going to be my shot, my opportunity to prove myself. Well, you still get that opportunity with Chris Carson because they are going to want to try and keep him as healthy as possible through the given season. And you've got to prove to yourself and the rest of the league that you can stay healthy for an entire year. And so I feel comfortable with where they're at. But, Stacey, you talk about adapting. I feel comfortable with Shane Waldron's ability to find solutions and answers within his scheme that he knows extremely well that he's coming in with. But then also, if Rashad Penny can stay healthy and he can prove to everybody in this fourth year in the league that he's a guy that can be reliable, he's a guy that can step up if Chris Carson went down, I think that's got to be a big factor to that answer when you bring that question up to the table. And it's one that hasn't been answered effectively, which doesn't make you very comfortable, but I think that's what they're counting on and what they're banking on outside of Chris Carson, and they needed to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one thing that I will say is, would I feel differently if Chris Carson missed, let's say, four games, and you're paying him $8 to $10 million? Yeah, I'd feel pretty different about that signing, and I'd be pretty upset, and I would say that it's probably a signing that was an overreach or an overstep. Getting Chris Carson at five and a half.
Bargain.
That is an absolute bargain. I will take that all day, every day. Wildly, wildly worth it.
You already had him as a steal, as a seventh round pick. You were paying him nothing. Good for Chris Carson. And quite honestly, in a different market, in a different year, when you didn't have the restrictions that COVID placed on the league revenue last year, he probably gets more money and meaning money that he's worth. He has outperformed his original draft selection to such a degree that you almost like wanted him to get more money from Seattle, even knowing that they wouldn't have been able to afford it. I know the logic about paying running backs, especially on those second deals. For the most part, it's fair. Again, I can't stress this enough. For Pete Carroll's offense, you need that guy. For Pete Carroll's offense to be successful, you can't have this interchangeable whatever kind of rotation of running backs. Mm-hmm. We've seen that try and fail. We all remember 2017 when one running back, J.D. McKissic, got a rushing touchdown. Russell Wilson was your leading rusher, which, no offense, Russ, but at 32, 33 years old,
hey, he was your second leading rusher this last year,
but you slowly over time are not going to be able to lean on him for that. You need a good running back with the kind of offense,
right,
Pete Carroll wants to have. If anything, and I turn to Ray Roberts tweeted about this, if anything, I hope that they use him a little bit more. Do I want like a run heavy offense? No, I'd like to see them utilize the weapons they have in their pass game also. You have a franchise quarterback. You have two top receivers. I want to see you utilize those. But there were many games this year, and you and I talked about this, when we were like, why aren't they using Carson more?
Right.
What's happening here?
Well, there's parts of it where you get into games and you get in the flow of things where if the running game is going and it's strong and it's working effectively, and Chris Carson in games, I mean, he finished the season this last year in 2020, 4.8 yards average per carry. That's ridiculous. He has a career average of 4.6 yards per carry. If he's going in a game and the running game is effective, keep feeding him the rock, right? And I think that they were caught in between in terms of the style in which they wanted to play, and yet also trying to be conscientious of trying to keep Chris Carson healthy. At some point, you just got to let the guy go. And I think that they will find that nice, happy medium this season. I am very confident in that, very excited about that. I think that they have a true difference maker at the running back position that is going to make this offense very balanced, and it's also going to add a physical presence to it with the offensive line and with Chris Carson coming downhill. It's an exciting opportunity for the Seahawks offense to continue. I think that they have put themselves in a position where we'll see what they do at the third receiver position moving forward, but they put themselves in a position where they had the highest scoring offense in franchise history this last year. I think they're putting themselves in a position where they can be not only as good as that, but even better, and do it at the right times.
I'm already seeing some really good questions from listeners right now, like, hey, so what does avoidable year mean? What does it mean for Rashad Penny? Would he be a salary cap casualty? All good questions in terms of cap, which is why you guys should be excited, because at noon, top of the hour, we're going to have CBS Sports salary cap expert Joel Corey on to answer all of these questions with us. We're going to defer to the expert here, so don't go anywhere. In 45 minutes, he's going to join us and tell us everything we need to know about Seattle's salary cap, including what some of these recent contracts mean. Before we get to three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage, Curtis, I need a tourney update.
Pac-12 still undefeated.
There
Oregon,
you go.
Beating Iowa this morning.
Woo!
Who?
I never thought in my life I would cheer for Oregon.
Who would have thought? Like, seriously, the Pac-12 going into this tournament that they would be undefeated? Are you kidding me?
Oh, I could have told you that. I mean, I predicted it. You know
Oregon
me.
State might go to the Elite Eight, guys.
Stacey over
Bracketologist Stacey Ross. I have one team alive in my Final Four.
Are you kidding?
Our Final Four.
This is insane. Absolutely insane.
8-0. James Holzhauer, Jeopardy champion, he has a really great tweet out there. He says, conferences whose names correctly count their numbers of teams are 8-0. Those that don't are 13-13.
Woo!
Just saying.
Just saying. Now, who's, just quickly, the most kind of lovable or easy to root for team Pac-12 in the tourney? It's got to be Oregon State, right? That's who I'm like hardcore rooting for. I'm really going for Ohio. My friend is a Bobcat. One of my friends is an actual Bobcat. My friend's an Ohio grad. He's hyped. He loves a good underdog story. I'm going for Ohio. I actually like them in today's matchup, but Oregon State, man, they are fun to watch. Like, I would love to see them advance.
They are. And I've got two teams right now. We have put our show behind the Zags. We are all on board
on
the Zags.
Did pick the Zags.
My mother-in-law, Denise, is like the biggest Zags fan out there. So, definitely behind the Zags. And then I've got my Kansas Jayhawks still in the tournament. Eastern gave them a serious run for their money. But Jayhawks are still alive.
Time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Well, speaking of the NCAA tournament, all sorts of double-digit seeds moving on. So who is the actual Cinderella of this year's tournament? There is plenty to pick from.
Right? Two big upsets?
Yeah. I mean, Loyola is also another candidate,
yeah, but
too.
They're an 8 seed.
That was a big one.
I'm going to go with Oral Roberts so far in terms of biggest, most notable upsets.
I will pick Oral Roberts as well. However, I would say Abilene Christian against Texas, Curtis, but Shaka Smart, man. I watch Big 12 basketball a lot, and he just, with all the talent that he has there at Texas, he is yet to really truly put it all together. So does it shock me to no end that Texas choked? Not really. But that still was a huge, huge loss.
Question two.
Number two.
Just wanted an excuse to play a couple of home runs. Here's Jared Kelnick yesterday.
3-1. Swing, and this is clobbered out to right field. Back, and gone. Jared Kelnick going yard out to right field. This game is tied at 1.
Not the only super prospect to go deep. Here's Julio Rodriguez.
The pitch swung on and lifted to left field, left center. Back is Mitchell. He is back. He is looking up, and this is way gone. That ball just kept on going.
Jake
Julio
Spanning.
Rodriguez has gone deep. Jared Kelnick has gone deep in this game. And the Mariners have taken the lead. It's 2-1.
Did somebody
turn up the heat in the studio right now?
You look uncomfortably hot.
Just hearing those two sound bites. My goodness, tell me we don't have more news from
what's
from
the
yesterday.
Question,
well,
Curtis.
The question here is, which tool would you rather have? Okay. Jared Kelnick's confidence or Julio Rodriguez's build?
Ooh.
Wow.
Well, I already have Julio Rodriguez's build. So.
And Jared Kelnick's confidence. So, I mean,
I'm going to go with Julio's build because I have spent 100% of my life wondering what it would be like to be taller than 5'2".
It's very fair.
Not even to be able to just hit dingers. Like, that would be cool. But, like, what would it be like to just reach things?
I would say probably Kelnick's confidence, but Kelnick has the type of confidence that could get you in trouble in life.
Mm.
Like, if you are not an athlete,
right,
and you have Jared Kelnick's confidence,
you're the worst guy at the office. You're
easy.
The most annoying
you're
guy at the
office. Insufferable. Absolutely insufferable. But if you're an athlete,
it's great.
Then I would say Kelnick's confidence is great. So I will say Kelnick's confidence as an athlete. If I was an athlete, I'd want his confidence.
Curtis, what about you?
Yeah, I'd take the confidence. I mean, we've seen plenty of guys who are just sculpted out of marble, not do so hot at the big league level. Not many people can have that swagger that Jared Kelnick has.
Yeah.
I might take that over Julio's bill.
Guys, are we getting to the point? I mean, Julio's had, you're not going to bring
he's
him
confident
up.
Too, though. He's a confident guy.
Yeah, don't undersell his confidence
he's
either.
He's confident.
Yeah, he's a confident dude. But, like, he has really wowed everybody in spring training this year. I mean, you got to love to see the development of Julio Rodriguez in this training camp. And with Kelnick, I know he's been sitting out, guys. Like, I know he's been out with an injury. I know that it probably is more likely that he goes down to the minor leagues, but I don't know. Watching him, I saw some video. I think, you know, Divish was posting it, Ryan Divish and the Mariners. And Kelnick's ability to go track the ball out in the outfield, the way he's swinging the bat, I don't know. Like, I've just been a proponent of this guy, the way his swagger is, his confidence, what he brings to the table. I just think it would be a great thing for the team. To have this young guy who's pushing everybody, like I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but I don't think he's that far off.
Number three,
Blake Griffin dunked for the first time in 2 years on
Sunday.
There
you go, Blake.
What is something you used to do that now doesn't come so easily to you?
Walk upstairs, Jake. How about you?
Yeah, that's a big one for Stacey.
I think it's so. When I'm in quarterback training,
okay.
So I could be, when I was just like, this is just even like a couple years ago, I could not throw the entire session and I could step in and be like, hey, this is how I want it to look and throw it and not have any issues and all that. I tried to do that the other day and I think I almost tore my arm. Like every ligament in my arm just almost ripped off. And I realized like, yeah, I've got to warm up. I got to warm up to start these things. Like, I can't just step in and just let it rip like I used to. With no repercussion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. I didn't like that.
I have a eat and drink. When it comes to eating and drinking, especially large quantities of sugar. Like, anyone can know that in their early 20s, you can eat and drink pretty much whatever you want.
Mm.
And nothing matters.
Yes.
Now in my 30s, early 30s, if I have like five Oreos, I'm dead. I'm deceased. Like four slices of pizza and I have heartburn. Like I can't handle it.
You know what else that I used to be able to do that I can't do for the life of me anymore is like sit on my knees. You know, like instead of crisscross applesauce, like sit on your knees.
Yeah.
Like I have to do that all the time because Jackson loves playing Legos. He loves playing like with these plus things.
Yeah.
And he wants me to be down on the floor with him playing, right?
Jake, I'm concerned.
And I get down on my knees, and like I get up, and I have to take a minute. It's not good.
Not good.
Not good.
All right. Now I'm going to do a shameless quick promotion, at least for the show. We're going to have Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer joining us at 1:30. So we're going to get plenty of updates about this. But before we talk to Shannon, we're going to bring on Mike because I got to talk about James Paxton. We saw his first outing of spring, struck out 8. Good stuff. We're going to ask Mike what he thought about it next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I want to be able to talk about James Paxton, his first outing of the spring. Before I get to any of that, Curtis and I and Jake have decided we need your immediate thoughts on the men's tourney.
Oh, yeah. Big bracketologist Mike Salk here
to tell us who he takes moving on to the Sweet 16 from today's games. Mike.
Why are they playing on Monday? Like, I'm still not over the fact that they're playing on Monday. This is not my
schedule.
I'm supposed to watch the tournament Thursday, Friday, And then now Monday, it's just very confusing to me. I also think the tournament is the rare, it's the rare event where it gets less interesting the longer it goes. Like round one is the best round of the tournament. Round two is good too.
I could see that.
And then once you get past the opening weekend, I'm always surprised. Like I care less about who wins the tournament than about the random teams and how they do. The best part of the tournament is just being able to turn on any game without knowing anybody on either team, instantly deciding who you're rooting for, either because of your bracket or just for no reason at all, and then watching a game inevitably come down to the final moments. And I think that's, you know, that's always what I enjoy most about the Rutgers game last night. Rutgers Houston was like that. Just kind of turn it on. Like I don't have a rooting interest in either Rutgers or Houston, but watching that kid come back into the game after he had been injured, back was hurt, and put the team, you know, figuratively on his injured back was just awesome to watch.
Yeah, it is a fun part of the tournament. Salk, we got some great news on Friday, late Friday, that Chris Carson is returning to the Seahawks. What did you make of that news?
Well, it's good because he came, you know, he's back at their price, right? I like Chris Carson. I think he's a really good running back, and they struggled to find that in the post-Marshawn Lynch era. I should say the first post-Marshawn Lynch era, not including what he did for when he's in his brief return. And Carson really solidified that and gave them a running game, which is important for Pete's offense. And they get him back at their price. I do hope that there's still room to actually explore what Rashad Penny has this year. And I know that's always sound, you know, crazy and is met with laughter because Rashad Penny hasn't lived up to his first round billing. But when he's given more than 10 carries in a game, the guy produces. So I sure would like to see what happens, assuming that he's able to be healthy this year, with giving him the ball more often. And if that's another way of being able to keep Carson healthy throughout an entire season, then I would like to see a little bit more balance in that running attack.
Mike, I thought Jared Kelnick's injury would make the decision for Jerry DePoto. And then lo and behold, he comes back and looks great and once again pushing to try to see if he can break camp with the team. Now, I think we're still not expecting that to happen, but I certainly didn't expect him to even be pushing for it once again. I thought that would be done, decision made, it's over. Are you?
Yeah, it's still maybe.
I was going to say, where are you sitting on this right now?
Don't know. I mean, it still may be over, Stacey, just based on them wanting to get more looks at him, but gosh. I mean, just seeing the video of that home run he hit yesterday, I mean, that ball got out in a hurry. The sound off the bat, the explosion of the ball. I mean, the kid has clearly, you know, got a different element to him than we're used to seeing. And by the way, the ball that Julio Rodriguez hit, I think it was Friday, was absolutely in the same category. Opposite field home run over 115 miles an hour. That's rare. That's not just supposed to happen. And for him to do it at his age is just pretty absurd. So, you know, I think all things still continue to look great for these two prized prospects. As for whether or not Kelnick's ready, you know, I think it's hard to tell because we're not seeing the little things. I don't know that he's the most mature kid off the field, and I think that's going to be a question mark of how he handles this. How does he handle failure if he comes up and isn't able to have the kind of success that you'd want to have him have right away? I mean, is there something to continuing to build that up and maybe even letting him fail a little bit in AAA before bringing him straight to the major? So there's still a lot of questions that they've got to answer, but you're right. His play certainly on the field is making this a real interesting challenge, as is the play of Taylor Trammell.
Yeah, exactly. We did talk about Trammell last time around, but in terms of seeing Julio, right, Julio Rodriguez is the prospect that is out there a little bit further. But it has been really nice to see his development in spring training and to see him do some of the things that you described. And then also one of the things that wasn't on video but was a part of the game was him from right field throwing a base runner out, you know, trying to go from first to third. I mean, those are some pretty awesome things that you see from this young man. What do you think the realistic timeline is for him? You don't see him all the way through till 2022, or is he a guy that you could potentially maybe see at the end of the year this year, maybe in August?
Be surprising to me if they could see him this year just because of the age, but also just because of the number of at-bats that he missed last year and what is he able to get this year. I think that's going to be a stretch for him, not impossible, but probably a stretch to even see him certainly this year, and I think even next year will be tough for him, but not impossible again. So I think what you love is, look, spring training performances don't mean anything, and yes, someone like Julio is still a year or two away, fine, but how nice is it to see him not look overwhelmed? Mm-hmm. Right? There are so many times you find yourself making excuses for young players, you know, who are too young. Well, he's too young for spring training and he's really just here to get a look and, you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's okay that he made a mistake or he's not ready for that level of pitching. You know, he hasn't shown any of that. And same with Kelnick. Every time you put them in a game against the major leaguers, and in some cases, pretty good major leaguers, they don't look lost at all. They look ready to be up for that challenge and have the kind of success that you want. I remember being down there a few years ago and seeing Julio there, and he was really, really young then. I think now you're starting to see him able to actually contribute against major leaguers, which is a very encouraging sign for his hopefully superstar future.
Last question here. Justice Sheffield has been a guy that you've been particularly curious about watching. Again, one of the guys you've been continuing to follow his development. He will be pitching today against the Dodgers and Trevor Bauer. What do you want to see more of from him?
Well, consistency is probably the thing, right? I mean, we know he's got good stuff. Can he limit the number of pitches that he needs to get through early innings so that he can go deeper into ball games? That's how you end up becoming a top of the rotation kind of starter. And I think he's got the ability to do it. I really do. I mean, you're right. I always bring up his name because I think he gets kind of lost in the shuffle. All the conversation about the young players, the young prospects, Kelnick and Julio, and then, you know, kind of Evan White, who signed his deal before coming up, and of course the Rookie of the Year and Kyle Lewis. Those guys garner an awful lot of attention. But you got a young left-handed stud pitcher in Justice Sheffield, who, for my money, was just as good as any rookie last year outside of Kyle Lewis. So, you know, my eyes are always on him because I think what he can do for your team long-term might be more than even Evan White or Kyle Lewis can. I just think, you know, a lefty pitcher with that kind of upside is so important.
All right. He is Mike Salk again, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Joins us every weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right. See ya.
All right. Upsets have been the story of the men's tourney this weekend, but there's also another story that's going to be of interest, particularly here on the West Coast and the Pacific Northwest, and that is the success of the Pac-12 through the early rounds of the tournament. Oregon just beat number 2 Iowa 95-80 to advance to the Sweet 16. UCLA, USC, Colorado all tipping off later today. Oregon State already in the Sweet 16. So the Pac-12, now the most successful conference in the men's tourney so far, just like we all expected. We're going to take a look at who from that conference is maybe the most legit contender next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, before we jump into the men's tourney, I have to tell you guys, we have maybe the coolest contest we've ever run. Certainly since Jake and I have been on air. I remember we've had some cool ones, but this one is, I heard about it and thought, this is genuinely exciting. Brooke, Jake's wife, heard about it, and you said she was like, I would be emotional. I mean, Brooke's pregnant. You guys are pregnant,
yeah,
but still.
Give that caveat.
she is pregnant.
She's pregnant, so she's wildly emotional, but she's like, there's no way I could handle this. Like, I would make it weird almost.
It's a big responsibility.
It's a big responsibility. So emotional. But Brooke is not alone there because even though she's pregnant, I think that a lot of people would be emotional in this contest because it is momentous. So you have a chance to not only win tickets to opening day, that's fine. That's, we're all excited to be back. You have a chance to welcome the rest of us back to baseball by quite literally opening the gates to T-Mobile Park.
I mean, that is the coolest.
Are you kidding me right now?
After not being able to go to a game for a season and have everything shut down after COVID.
You're letting us all in.
You're the one that is opening the home plate gate.
Literally the gatekeeper of T-Mobile. You're bringing us all back.
That is incredible. And I would probably be wildly emotional too.
I know.
Like, you get to the point where it's like really cool and emotional and everybody's like super excited. And then there's like taking it one step too far where you're just like blubbery and everybody's like, okay, now you just kind of made this weird.
Try to hug people. They're like, please keep your distance.
Okay. It's okay.
Welcome in.
Yes. But honestly, it would be so awesome. So this is one of the coolest things I've ever heard of.
Exactly. So details are coming out later this week. That's when we're going to start the contest. So again, it hasn't started yet. We are just getting you guys primed and ready that there is a contest coming up later this week. we are so excited for. And those are the basic details of it. You'll be able to hear the promos running leading up to that with some more information. And then obviously later this week, we will officially start that and have details and information with how to enter. But one of the most exciting contests I can remember running.
Yeah,
you guys are going to love
it. I think 710 might get a call from Schmeek Schmeeps. I'm not sure.
Schmeek Schmeeps?
Yeah, he might be calling
Hi,
in.
Hi, part of the Schmeeps family.
Yeah. I would love to enter the contest. How could you do that?
My name is Schmeek and Schmuck.
Jake, we recognize your phone number.
No. It's not my number. It's somebody else's.
It says Jake Heaps calling. No, my name is John.
That's right.
All right, all right. This hour of Jake and Stacy, or John and Stacy, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino.
John and Tracy.
Brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Guys, the Pac-12, Curtis, I know you love this, the most successful conference in the men's tourney right now, just like we all expected. Oregon becoming the first winner from today's slate of games. Number 7 Oregon just beat number 2 Iowa. They're going to advance to the Sweet 16. You got three Pac-12 teams that are tipping off today. UCLA is going to be playing today. Who do they have? ACU. So no matter what, you have a double-digit seeded team moving on to the Sweet 16. No matter what, it's either going to be...
We got the Zags playing right now.
You got the Zags playing right now. We'll give you guys important updates as those become available. I'm personally rooting for Ohio. I know that's not a Pac-12 story, but that's also tipping off today. You got Colorado, number 5 Colorado against number 4 Florida State at 4:45. You got number 6 USC taking on number 3 Kansas. That's the last game of the day. And you've already got, of course, Oregon State going to take
Rock
on
shot.
Loyola in the Sweet 16. Taking down Sister Jean. Yeah. I can tell you right now.
Kyle Brown has never rooted harder in his life.
Never in his life has he rooted harder for Oregon State than he will against Loyola in the Sweet 16. But it's exciting. It is exciting to see this slate. I'm being facetious about expecting it because I was not expecting this. But all day Saturday, I was just yelling Conference of Champions.
We all felt like how Bill Walton feels every day. With just a tremendous amount of conference pride.
Well, and you know what? It's funny because Bill Walton also was, throughout the year, was saying, hey, that this conference is a lot tougher than people give it credit for.
I was not giving it credit for.
And I was not. I was assuming that this is one of the, you know, Bill Walton's moments where, hey, maybe he's, you know, experienced life just a little bit too much, if you catch my drift. And I think that, you know, he's just overhyping the conference that he's covering. But look at the way that they have been able to make a splash and an impact in the Pac-12 tourney. We'll see how far it goes. But, Curtis, I am still convinced there is one dramatic reason that this has happened.
Oh, God, I feel like this is going to be a joke. But what is it, Jay?
Well, it's Larry Scott. The curse has been lifted. The curse has been lifted from the conference. Do you remember the song that I played, that I had Curtis, the soundbite that I had him play when he initially got fired?
What was it?
It was from The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, The
Wicked Witch is Dead.
Oh, that's really dark, Jake.
Let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
Why are you dancing, weirdo?
Dancing on the grave of Larry Scott's tenure as Pac-12
Both
commissioner.
Of you.
The
Pac-12 so
now the Pac-12 can be the All conference right. of champions again.
Once again, back at it, Curtis. You know college hoops better than anyone I know. I know your beloved Wildcats, Bear Down, are not in it. For this year, they'll be back.
Oh.
They'll be back.
You better recognize.
They're not in it, but who? I'm going to give you some options between Oregon State, and I know that any of Colorado, UCLA, and USC could still be bounced today, but which of all of these teams do you think, you know what? They have the most legit chance to keep advancing.
I would say Oregon. I mean, they looked incredible today against Iowa, number 2 seed, just controlling that game. And Dana Altman is, if he's not the best coach in the Pac-12, he's one of the top 2. And they just go deep every year in the tournament. I believe 5 of the last 6 years they've gone to the Sweet 16. I mean, that is a team that knows how to win in March. I think Oregon, of the Pac-12 teams remaining, which are all of them, I think they have the best shot to go far in this tournament. But, I mean, you look at UCLA, they got a pretty nice matchup in the second round against number 14-seeded Abilene Christian. They could easily go far in this tournament mm-hmm. as well. I mean, and UCLA had to play an extra game. They had to beat Michigan State in order to get into the tournament. So they're a little battle-tested themselves. So it's incredible from a Pac-12 fan perspective because so often we are the butt of the joke from the national media.
Yep.
And now, like, yeah, this is a minor amount of success.
But see you later, Big Ten. But
exactly. You know
see
what? Where's the Big Ten? Where are you at?
Whoa,
you're not
what's
here.
What's that? We can't hear you right now. It feels good.
It feels incredible.
Good. This is how I feel when Washington beats Stanford, because their degrees intimidate me so that when we do beat them in any sport, I'm like, yeah, take that to the bank, you and your stupid, prestigious university. Get out of here.
Which is rich coming from another university that likes to shower upon how rich their degrees are on everybody else in the conference.
Jake, the elites get mad at the elites.
It's the top public research institution in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
But it's not
this
a big deal.
Unbelievable.
No, I know. Washington Huskies. We are a prestigious research institution.
That, just hearing you say that about Stanford just made me cringe. Like, I just wanted to curl up somewhere.
What about Oregon State? Curtis, I really want Oregon State to keep it moving.
They're the darlings.
Absolutely. Ohio are the two teams I am rooting so hard for. Thankfully, they aren't facing each other. Oregon State already in the Sweet 16 again, going to face off against Loyola. And then Ohio playing today. And I actually genuinely think that they've got a pretty good shot.
Of all the Pac-12 schools, I would say Oregon State is probably the least hateable of them all.
Easily.
Of all 12 schools, regardless
close.
Of sports, no one's got beef with the Beavers.
Curtis,
no one can hate on them.
I'm now going to make you flip it. Who's the most hateable Pac-12 school?
Oh, the most hateable?
I already know what you're going to say. Save your breath.
It's those Scum Devils at ASU. Well, it's also USC. It's also,
okay, so
I mean,
it's
there's
everyone.
Oregon.
Okay,
there's
it.
The Huskies.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean,
fair.
Oregon
there's
is
plenty
de-
to
Oregon's
not like.
Definitely up there in my mind. I think the weird thing is that you would love to say that Oregon State's got a great chance, but, you know, Loyola's been there before, right?
Loyola's like, also
yeah.
good.
This is a Cinderella team,
yeah.
quote unquote, but this is also a team that's been there, done that. So in terms of their program, their history, like, this isn't necessarily too big of a stage for them. It certainly is for Oregon State mm-hmm. and their basketball history right now, but the one that seems like they have maybe the least path of resistance could possibly be Oregon State. But outside of that, UCLA, you know, Abilene Christian, you would think that would be one. But they just beat number 3 seed Texas. I mean, I don't know if you could just chalk that up to maybe an easy victory for them.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Justice Sheffield and the Mariners take on Trevor Bauer and the Dodgers tonight, 6:40 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. Also, be sure to listen all week for your chance to win tickets to opening day. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. We've been getting so many good questions about the Seahawks salary cap, especially with those recent signings. So who better to ask than CBS Sports salary cap expert Joel Corey. He joins us next.